Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Welcome, 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 party people. It is Thursday, December 29th, and it is absolutely stunning outside today. Again, the magic is back, Ev. I don't want to take too much credit for it, but you know, as soon as I come around, that we're going to get some lovely, lovely weather. It is 53 degrees at my house right now.
Well, it's a dangerous game because you take credit for the good, then you're taking credit for the bad. So it's up to you. It's up to you.
No. I just don't come around when it's bad. It's a win-win situation for me. Then it's Luke's fault, right?
Always.
Sorry. You know, we came from the frozen tundra last week of 30 below wind chills to all of a sudden being real feels of 50, hitting almost 60 degrees I'm seeing in some areas in southeastern Wisconsin. And I have to say, I love it. And I feel really bad about loving it. You know, tell me if this makes sense or if I'm just like overthinking it. Personally, warm weather like this in winter is great. You know, nobody likes being breathing air that hurts because it's so dang cold. But on a, you know, mid-December, end of December day like today when it's 50 degrees, you can go outside and, I mean, shorts and a t-shirt, really, when you compare it to what we had last week. And as much as it feels good personally, I can't help but feel terrible understanding the consequences of days like this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like for life on Earth, this is super unhealthy to have a 55 degree December day in Wisconsin. As much as I love it, that's just not sustainable.
Now, are you talking about, you know, the nature, the critters out there? You know, we got little animals preparing for winter, getting ready to hibernate, stashing nuts. And then these wild swings just sort of throw the whole thing into chaos.
Yeah, I mean, there were, and it goes both ways too. The extreme differences in weather patterns that we're seeing, like last week's massive tundra, where, I mean, there were, you know, images going viral on Twitter of deer that were just frozen in place, almost blocks of ice hopping through the terrain, birds that were just clumped in frozen snow because it's just literally unsurvivable type cold. And obviously we have thawed from that deep freeze, but one thing that is still frozen is Robin Voss, well, his heart, first of all, but also the shared revenue payments at the state level, a policy that Voss has said is, quote, basically broken. And as a bit of a refresher, shared revenue payments is money that the state collects but ends up returning to local units of government. And the lack of shared revenue is one of the reasons that Milwaukee County, for example, is in such a dire financial strait right now. There was an article from the Journal Sentinel this morning from Corey Hess and Allison Durr. Robin Voss wants Milwaukee to explore privatizing or sharing services before he considers a dedicated sales tax. Once again, screwing over the economic engine of the state.
I was thinking about this yesterday, too. Just the actual hellscape that not even just Wisconsin, that the entire nation would become if, you know, these critical services were privatized.
We're already
in trouble.
No, 100%, 100%.
Oh, man, the corruption, the nepotism, the cronyism, it would just be devastating.
And I think that's the kind of the goal for a lot of these conservative politicians, because it's their friends, it's their family, it's their campaign donors are the ones who own all of these services that would become privatized. And they would be the ones who directly benefit from taking this power away from the state and putting it into the hands of a very elite few. Now, Robin Voss has said before he would consider a dedicated sales tax for Milwaukee. But of course, he first wants leaders to consider privatizing or sharing services. This comes as Milwaukee faces a very imminent financial crisis that is only going to get worse and worse and worse as the federal pandemic aid runs out in the coming years. Voss said in an interview with the Journal Sentinel that simply giving Milwaukee money would only flatten the city's financial problems for a few years. And he went on to ask Mayor Cavalier Johnson and County Executive David Crowley for a list of potential services that could be privatized or shared, saying, quote, show me some examples where you're willing to do things that are politically unpopular because they're the right answer.
Will, doing the
dishes. Does he have no shame?
It's doing the dishes is just going to keep the counter clean for a couple days. You know? What?
It's just going to get dirty again. What's the point?
Yeah, cleaning your room? I mean, the cockroaches will just hide somewhere else. What's the point?
I can't understand how people like this can get elected cycle after cycle after cycle the when they have no policy proposals outside of let's get rid of all of the public services that actually help your life and start putting it in the hands of a few private entities that will charge you unfathomable amounts of money for it. And I guess to take the story into another tangent that I saw from actually the Journal Sentinel as well this morning, an article on new Wisconsin Republican Chairman Brian Schimming, who
this is gold.
Now, this is stunning, actually. He has said that his goal is to kind of reshape the Wisconsin GOP. Ron Johnson obviously won re-election, mm-hmm. but Tim Michaels got smoked. Now, he was a uniquely bad candidate, and Tony Evers was a pretty strong candidate for the state.
Yeah.
So perhaps that's not the best example of how the state is going to look going forward.
I mean, Evers tripled his margin. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Michaels got smoked.
He did improve. But they did win the treasurer's office. And that's the first statewide election outside of Johnson this year that they had won since Johnson in 2016. Now, Schimming was unanimously elected the chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin on December 10th, seceding Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow, who did not seek a second term. But there's a lot of, let's say, antagonistic ideas that Schimming is proposing that tend to go against what is usually considered conservative ideals.
It's kind of stunning,
big one.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Please continue. This is a really interesting story. It sort of broke to my mind yesterday. And
Well, the biggest point is he's talking about the importance of encouraging Republicans to take up early voting.
This goes
completely opposite what Donald Trump spent years doing as he attempted to sow doubts about the process year after year after year. But the GOP, you know, they had a very disappointing midterm results. They're trying to do what they can to shake it up. Now, all of a sudden, early voting is okay because we want our constituents to take that route. They all of a sudden think it's an acceptable form of voting. I have to laugh at the hypocrisy because, you know, during the pandemic, which was the perfect time to early vote or absentee vote. Oh, no, this is unacceptable. We can't trust the system. The Democrats are using it to steal elections. Oh, wait a minute. They won the election anyways. Oh, I guess we're going to have to try something else now. What do you think?
I mean, it's the absurdity. The absurdity, Will. I mean, it makes sense, right? Let's just be real. You know, the pragmatist in me sees that, yeah, this is sort of what you have to do when you get smoked like Michaels did. You have to change your tact. And here, they've made a lot of bad decisions strategically as far as how, you know, elections are run, the sort of doubt that they sow in our institutions. And yeah, so it makes sense to me that they're kind of doing this end run around everything they've been saying for the last few years. And it's, I don't like to see it as far as, you know, there was some schadenfreude in seeing them make these decisions, you know, rallying against the systems that they could use to, you know, win elections maybe. So not surprised. Funny to see this man coming out hard with it. I'm really excited to see the response here.
Well, and early voting should be something that's supported by both parties because in theory, we should want everybody to vote. Right? It's a democratic republic, one person, one vote, one voice.
Ideally it's a holiday, you know? Everybody gets the time.
Agreed. 100%. Perfect world, we would make Election Day a holiday. It would be a paid holiday so that people aren't having to choose between putting food on the table for dinner that night or whether or not they vote. But as we're seeing in a lot of, I see it in a lot of, let's say, ultra right wing social media circles, that they like to refer back to, well, the founding fathers only wanted white males who owned land to vote. So we should go back to that kind of philosophy because those are the only people who know what they're talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, again, you can't simultaneously say that and then in good faith also argue that you care about having a representative democracy.
What's
right?
You have good faith. You what is this good faith?
Somebody who does not flip their opinions like a pancake, depending on what.
No
we'll
idea
support.
What you're talking about. No clue.
So, you know, voting early. Yes. Great. Awesome. I'm glad to see the Wisconsin GOP finally getting behind it. It's unfortunate that it took a disastrous midterm result, though. The Wisconsin GOP said that the party performed, quote, pretty well, but we need to dramatically increase it and make sure our people are comfortable voting that way, in reference to early voting, of course. So I am never going to be upset about good policy being supported, no matter who's supporting it. Early voting should be supported. We need to make sure everybody's voice is heard and everybody has the right to be heard. Mm-hmm. But I wish that would be something that is more in line with all aspects of policy support. To give a direct example of that, Robin Voss came out and said this week that the voters will not have the ability to decide abortion on their own. Despite the fact that Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, as well as Democratic Governor Tony Evers, have called for a statewide referendum, Voss said that the legislature will handle any changes to the law because they have to get the, quote, nuances right. So we're making a little bit of headway in some regards. There's still a lot of progress that needs to be made in other regards. But, you know, one day at a time, right? Saving democracy is a 24/7 gig. Oh. We say it all the time. And
yeah, we do.
It's not going to happen overnight. So we got a commercial break coming up. We'll be right back after the break. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. And occasionally, especially on nice days, Will and Evan. We got a great show for you today. We'll see you right after the break.
We got to pay the bills somehow.
People running it that didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Welcome back, party people. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. And if you're lucky and the weather is nice, Will and Evan, give us a call at 844-967-2789 if you want to share a tangent with us today. And Evan, I got to touch on this because this was a little bit of breaking news we saw yesterday. Now, if you missed yesterday's show, please go back and see it. We reviewed the interview Luke and I had last week with the Honorable Reverend Everett Mitchell, who is running for state Supreme Court in what is, in my opinion, at least the most important race of the past probably 25 years in the state of Wisconsin. And it will dictate the next two or three decades worth of Wisconsin politics. I mean, that race will genuinely change everything from the gerrymandered maps to the squatting on of for example, Fred Preen with the DNR board. Like this race is incredibly, incredibly important. But anyways, we didn't have the chance to cover this news that broke yesterday. And less than 2 weeks after announcing his campaign for the state Senate, for the 8th state Senate seat, former Senator Randy Hopper has suspended his campaign and will be endorsing State Rep Dan Knodel. Now, if you are a longtime listener of the show, you will recognize that is the very same Dan Knodel that represents my assembly district, unfortunately. And he is in a very contested primary along with Janelle Branchen. And There's a couple other candidates. We Luke and I discussed this on the show a few weeks ago. I'm mind blanking right now, but we expected a lot of fire in this primary. This was going to be interesting with so many candidates involved and two candidates in particular that really represent the establishment wing of the Wisconsin GOP and the anti-establishment wing of the Wisconsin GOP between Knodel and Branchen. Now, after he suspended his campaign, Hopper said, and I quote, my candidacy threatens to act as a spoiler by splitting the vote and allowing a divisive fringe candidate to win the primary, putting at risk Republicans' chances of holding the seat in the general election. Now, I can't help but laugh at a statement like that because Hopper is obviously referring to State Rep. Janelle Branchen.
What's so funny?
Who, as we discussed on Tuesday, Robin Voss has come out pretty aggressively again, saying things like, I would never vote for her. I don't understand why anyone would vote for her.
We have one bad apple.
She's crazy, she's radical, she's fringe, whatever.
Just one bad apple.
It's the one bad apple, exactly. Good point, Ev. I can't help but laugh because Dan Knodel also signed the January 5th letter to Mike Pence asking him not to certify the election, the same letter that Janelle Branchen signed. He is just as much of an election denier as Janelle Branchen. He is just as much willing to toss aside the will of the people as Janelle Branchen. He is just as divisive, radical, and fringe as Janelle Branchen. The difference is he kisses the ring. He falls in line. He does and says what Robin Voss tells him to. Branchen does not. So when the Wisconsin GOP comes out calling one of their own candidates divisive and fringe and radical and crazy and all those kind of things, they're not referring to their ideology. They're not referring to the policies that these candidates support. They are quite literally saying this candidate does not do and say what we tell them to.
Mm-hmm.
What other organizations do we know that operate like this, Evan? This sounds to me like a criminal organization, a mafia. Like its loyalty is more important than anything else.
Oh man.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, your actual the fiber of your being, the things that drive you to, you know, to do the good work, as it were. She's gone, Ms. Branchen, a long way to the right. She started out, I seem to remember her as being a fairly sane individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
I don't know. So
she is tacked, like her tack to the right has
that would have
been
before
insane.
My time.
She's gone so much farther. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that really gets me, that I can't understand or relate with, this rubber banding, right? The ability to really change your laurels so much as to, I mean, you're hardly a whole person at that point. Like, what do you believe in? It's incredible.
I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is, I don't believe in anything. I do and say what I think my constituents want to hear, which conceptually I think is a good thing. I think that's more of a reflection on the voting base, that the Republican voting base has gone so crazy. But I can't help but laugh at how absurd it is that you can quite literally reject the will of the people and have multiple representatives of the Wisconsin GOP doing this, but only label the ones who don't fall in line as divisive or fringe and cut all access to resources. And it's just so perfectly on brand for the Republicans in this state in particular.
We only have a couple minutes real quick before you change too much here. That's an interesting thought, how, you know, the ideals of our representatives sort of follow the base in a way. And I'm just curious, what do you think about that? You know, at what point is your responsibility as an elected official to carry out the will of your constituents, even if it's deeply immoral and damaging, right? Is there a point at which doing the actual right thing, the good, you know, doing good for the country outweighs what your constituents want? Is it because the inherent sort of power dynamic that's who elects you, so you got to keep them happy?
Right. Well, exactly. Your job is to serve your constituents. So, you know, in
even
theory,
if you don't like it,
yeah, you would have to do what the majority, or you should be doing what the majority of the people who elected you want you to do, even if you personally disagree with it. In practice, is that the best case scenario? That's not up for me. That's not my right to say. I think that comes down to the elected official themselves, and it comes down to the people who elect them. Because if you continue doing things that your constituents don't like, you should not win re-election. That shouldn't be a complicated issue. But if you are doing what the constituents want you to do, and then it turns out to hurt your constituents, they will probably not re-elect you either.
Or it's criminal activity in one way or another. I mean, it's insanity.
Yeah. So where do you draw the line? I don't know. That's not for me to determine. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and sometimes Will and Evan. Give us a call if you want to share a tangent with us. We're going to be right back after the break. We got another awesome guest coming on today. We're going to discuss the privatization of Medicare. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is a fascinating topic I don't think a whole lot of people are well-versed on. So we'll be right back.
Corruption.
Welcome back, party people. It is Thursday, December 29th, and you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and Will and Evan. Give us a call if you got a tangent you want to share with us, 844-967-2789. Looks like we got Joe from Madison on the line. What's up, Joe? How are you doing today?
Well, I wanted to ask a question about a couple of the things that you were bringing up in the previous half hour. Specifically, you were talking about the response of Speaker Robin Voss, Republican Robin Voss, to the concerns that that Milwaukee has had in reference to lack of shared revenue and how they're really looking at some dire times there. I'm curious if you guys can follow me a little bit on this. Now, Voss probably 2 days ago was talking about how he's going to be leaving the WEDC, a Republican creation under Walker, which replaced what we previously had, the Department of Commerce. He doesn't like it anymore, doesn't think it's working, and that he, even though it's a Republican-designed entity, and mm-hmm. he had been talking to, quote, relocation specialists. I gather these are people that, you know, bring businesses in, and they weren't happy with what was being offered, he felt. And, I mean, there was an odd line in there where he said, I'd really like to talk to Governor Evers about this, and I thought, well, why don't you just pick up the phone? How hard is this? But I'm wondering what kind of relocation specialists be looking at the state of Wisconsin if the response to the, to the biggest city in the state by the Republican leadership in the legislature is let it burn, basically. Privatize your services. We don't care. You guys have to figure it out. And even though we have $6.5 billion sitting there in a surplus, no way you're going to get your hands on it. And it this kind of same demonizing of Milwaukee. And at the same time, you're wanting businesses to come into the state. What kind of businesses are going to look at that as a sensible reaction to an economic problem that you just say, oh, well, I guess you don't. I mean, what businesses are they going to privatize? Fire service?
Exactly. I mean, you can't really. The options are so limited. And I believe actually Mayor Johnson, as well as Executive Crowley, basically said that we really don't have a ton of options for what we can do here. I like how you pointed out Voss called the Economic Development Department, quote, an abject failure, quite literally admitting that the Development Corps board that he appointed himself to in January 2021 just couldn't get it done anymore. And if you're admitting as the chief lawmaker in the state of Wisconsin, essentially the most powerful person in the state, that the city that is the largest economic engine in your state is going to be left to die, why would anybody else want to come here? What reason is there to come to the state of Wisconsin? And I think we're seeing that with a lot of the population drops as well, that young people are kind of fleeing the state. There's no long-term safe, reliable economic growth to be seen here. So that's an excellent question, Joe. Thanks for calling. We're going to move into the next segment. And this is something that's particularly important to me because I have been on some of these calls with some of the state organizers that have been pushing for to bring this attention to this issue to our national representatives. And that would be the privatization of Medicare. Now, a group of progressive lawmakers, including Elizabeth Warren, Rep. Jayapal, And Senator Sanders are calling on Biden health officials to immediately launch a fraud probe into the organizations taking part in what's known as ACO REACH, which is a slightly reformed version of a Medicare privatization scheme that the Trump administration, surprise, surprise, set in motion during its final months. In a Thursday letter to Chiquita Brooks-LeSueur, the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, 21 members of Congress voiced alarm that the ACO REACH pilot provides an opportunity for healthcare insurers with a history of defrauding and abusing Medicare and ripping off taxpayers to further encroach on the Medicare system. Now, I have a very good friend of mine and the executive director at Our Wisconsin Revolution, Mr. Andre Walton, here to join me and to discuss why this is so impactful, how this is going to impact all Americans, not just seniors, and what we can do and say to make a difference in this program, how we can let our representatives know that we are not happy. Andre, how are you today? What's up?
I'm doing good, Will, and thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it. I know you guys kind of covered this a little bit in the past, but yeah, I think it's really great to be on because I can kind of go in a little bit more depth about it. And I do want to bring up a little bit of past about it, of how we got to this point, because it was started under Trump, but the reason why this program was even possible to have is due to the ACA. And it was a provision in the Affordable Care Act that created the CMS Innovations Program, which basically was trying to find different payment models, whatever that means, for Medicaid and Medicare. And the reason why that's really weird is because we already have a very efficient payment model within Medicare. So it was not necessary. But yeah, it started all the way back during the ACA. So many people don't know that. And obviously it was created under President Donald Trump. But what makes this even more heinous is the fact that this is not like other programs where it has to go through traditional rulemaking processes, because it does not have to have a public hearing. So that's why it was so long before people really caught on to it, because it was not scrutinized to public comment, which was very, very sinister, because I mean, obviously, if people can't have public comment or know about it publicly, then people aren't going to know that they're being put onto these programs that they're not consenting. But yeah, that's just a little bit of background to give context of how we got to that point. So it started back, or the opportunity to even have this program started all the way back under Obama. But I think what's even more heinous about it is that it's been expanded under the Biden administration. A lot of people thought he would kill the program, but he turned it into the ACO REACH, what it is now today. It used to be the DCE program, but now it's kind of reformed. And the reason why I think,
just to clarify in the numbers a little bit, Andre, what I'm seeing is in its 3-year history, the Medicare Direct Contracting Program, now known as ACO REACH, has roughly doubled in size each year, going from 53 participants to 99 to as many as 202 participants planned for the 2023 cycle.
Yeah. And that's really concerning, but it's also not a surprise given like how much money is going into, for example, the Senate Democratic Campaign Committee. So I know last year, Clover Health donated over $500,000 to the Senate Dems Super PAC. And then an organization called Charmeth donated over $750,000 to the Senate PAC and over $250,000 to the Biden Victory Fund. And the reason why I wanted to bring that stat up is because it's a clear direction of why this has not been killed. I mean, the Biden administration has basically doubled down on their support for this program because obviously their donors want it. So it makes sense why it's being expanded, because the same health insurance industries that are donating to the Senate Democrats or the Senate Republicans or the Biden administration or the Trump administration are all in the same bed, and they all want to see this program survive. And
it's
that's
an
why
investment
I think,
for them. Yeah, they make more money off of the benefits of the program than they give away by donating to these politicians.
Exactly. And that's where I want to come in to talk about our Wisconsin Revolution organizing. So us with a few organizations such as PNHP, Physicians for a National Health Plan, if you guys didn't know what that meant, and with a few other groups such as Community Conversations and also AFSCME, we really caught on to this. So our committee chair, Steve Carlson, worked with Lorene Vedder and also Laurel Mark, who works with PNHP, they found out about this. So they said, hey, how can we make some type of ruckus about this, let people know that this happening? And what the our Wisconsin Revolution Healthcare Committee did is we decided to schedule a meeting with Senator Tammy Baldwin. And as a result of scheduling that meeting, she wrote a letter to Senator Ron Wyden calling for a hearing. Now, why this is significant is because, like I said, it is not subject to a hearing, so it can kind of go under the veil. But now that we have a sitting senator calling for a hearing, it makes it all the better because it becomes more public. You know, articles
just bringing attention to the issue.
Exactly. And I don't think this would have been as public if it wasn't for our Wisconsin Revolution in coordination with PNHP and other organizations bringing attention to this, because it really was flying heavily under the radar. And now, thanks to our work, more senators and more congresspeople are coming to the fold. I know Liz Warren has talked about it a lot more. Pramila Jayapal has talked about it a lot more. And now you're seeing a lot more support and against this program, because it is a privatization scheme. I think, you know, if you don't know, with the DCE program and ACO REACH, what's the difference between this and, for example, Medicare Advantage is that for Medicare Advantage, you have to have your consent to get into that program. For ACO REACH, you don't have to have the patient's consent. They can just be automatically enrolled based on if your primary care physician facility has been affiliated with one of these programs. So it's really heinous. They don't have to tell you. You can just be enrolled. And that's why you see so many people enrolled into it. I think the last stat I've seen was 350,000 seniors have been enrolled in this program without their consent, which is just mind-boggling. So it really is impactful that we brought this to a state's or a Wisconsin senator, because we do know that if it wasn't brought to her attention, she might not even have known about it. I mean, that's how much of the under the radar it was. A lot of U.S. Sitting senators did not even know about the program. So yeah, it's been really impactful for the works that we've done, but it's also a little bit scary because we see that if this continues, where are they going to take it next, right? It might not stop at Medicare. It might go to the United States Postal Service, which we already know they want to privatize as well. But that's one of the most popular programs in the U.S. is the USPS. So it's a scheme. We always knew that a lot of these politicians want to privatize these programs, but now they're doing it without any public scrutiny, which is even a little bit more scary, because in the past, there's a lot more public scrutiny, but now they're finding ways to do it without public scrutiny. And one thing I want to point out is that this is not a partisan thing. I mean, both parties are very, very much in bed on this situation. And like I said, it started under the Obama the opportunity was open under the Obama administration. It continued under the Trump administration, or Trump created the program, and it's being continued under the Biden administration. So it's really a bipartisan situation, and we have to call out both parties for this insane privatization scheme.
And I think, you know, when you talk about the raw numbers from a financial perspective, to cite the letter that Senator Warren sent out, one of the examples is Centene, a healthcare firm that's the parent company of three different DCEs that are currently operating in 27 states. Now, these DCEs, as you mentioned, these are paid for by the federal government to fund a portion of Medicare enrollees' care. They essentially act as a private middleman between the patients and their healthcare providers, skimming their percentage off the top, as, you know, predatory insurance industry tends to do. And under the ACO REACH, these middlemen are able to keep up to 40% of what they don't spend on care as profit and overhead. 40%. That is such an insane amount of money. The lawmakers pointed out that Centene paid over $97 million in 2021 alone to settle allegations of duplicate and inflated claims submitted to the Department of Veterans Affairs that occurred while its subsidiary HealthNet was acting as a third-party administrator for VA medical care. So they're able to take what, you know, some of the illegal things they're doing, push it off on one of these other companies, and just keep all of the benefits that they gather from it.
Yeah. And look at that in contrast. Medicare only has an overhead of 2%. So like it's very, very low cost. And if you put it into a privatization point, then you have to, they have profits. They're trying to stat pad their profits, and that just does not happen. And just to give you more context of like how bad the situation is, because of all the privatization schemes, Medicare has had to pay out over $143 billion to these private firms and corporations since 2008. That's a lot of money. And they keep saying, hey, you know, Medicare is running out of money. Well, I mean, one of the main reasons why that's even possible is because a lot of portions of Medicare is being privatized. And that just would not happen if it wasn't due to the profit motive and incentives that these corporations are having to deny care.
Why is it not surprising that a few ultra rich are siphoning funds from the rest of us and then claiming that, you know, oh, they're coming for us. Socialism can't spread the wealth. So yeah. We'll be right back after this break. Andre, I got a few more questions for you in regards to the privatization of Medicare. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and sometimes Will and Evan. See you shortly.
And if you don't know, now you know.
Welcome back, party people. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and sometimes Will and Evan. And today we have Andre Walden on from Our Wisconsin Revolution to discuss the privatization of Medicare. And now, Andre, as we kind of covered in the last segment, the presence of entities with long records of fraud and abuse, it's really dangerous. It puts patients and taxpayer dollars at risk while actively harming the consumer's ability to receive the health care that they require and not being overcharged purposely by these entities who are able to skim their percentage off the top. Now, Andre, I know that there's a little bit of a interesting revolving door behind the scenes as to who is really the catalyst behind this program. Could you share a little bit of that?
Yeah. So what I found out in my research of fighting against this program is that this program, or the writing of this program, was spearheaded by Liz Fowler, who wrote the legislation to bar the government from negotiating lower drug prices. So if you guys don't know, I think the U.S. government is one of the few governments in the world that can't negotiate lower drug prices with the pharmaceutical industries, which kind of blows my mind because a lot of the drugs that come out today are actually funded through taxpayer money. So we're kind of being double screwed. So we fund the drugs and then they sell them back to us at a premium cost. So we're getting double taxed. So
why not double dip on the American consumer?
Exactly. And I think that really shows why it's really heinous where this program is going to, because it's pretty much in the same situation. Because on one hand, the taxpayers are already paying for Medicare. And then on the second hand, we have to pay the premium costs of these DCE or ACO REACH programs. So it's really in the same light of that same nefarious drug price legislation. And that really exposes like what this really is about. It's about padding the profits of their friends and industry. And just to give you more context, Liz Fowler actually worked for Johnson & Johnson, which is a huge pharmaceutical company.
Surprise.
So it really shows kind of like that revolving door side of this corruption, that it doesn't really matter that this person worked in Johnson & Johnson. It's just like, oh, that's actually a benefit, and we should have this person spearheading this this program that, is a program that benefits working class people. But yeah, I mean, I thought that was an interesting fact, because I think a lot of people don't even realize that there's a revolving door going on within the Medicare program. Obviously, we see that a lot with lobbying, but we also don't really see it on programs that we benefit from. So I thought that was an interesting fact that I think the viewers or the listeners might be interested in knowing.
Agreed. And I do want to point out as well that a lot of patient advocate groups are not only, they're stating that the Medicare DCE REACH programs cannot be salvaged with policy tweaks whatsoever, as they essentially pose a fundamental threat to traditional Medicare. Groups such as Social Security Works, said on Twitter that, quote, no matter the name, these systems are designed to create profit for private insurers by delaying or denying care. We need to expand and improve Medicare, not destroy it with backdoor privatization. And I can't help but think of the expansion of Badger Care that has been a very popular topic in the state of Wisconsin over the past couple of years, and how the state legislature has rejected that time and time again, because we actively don't want to take care of our people. We want to funnel more and more money into the pockets of big insurance and big medical providers.
Well, what's very interesting about the denial of expansion of Badger Care is that it's very heinous, in that the way that you prove that something doesn't work is that you undermine it, right? So if you are constantly undermining the expansion of Badger Care and things aren't working out to the point where people like it to be, then you could say, hey, this program isn't working. The only way that we can solve this problem is by putting it into the private sector and privatizing this. And then that's really their scheme. If they undermine it, they can do exactly what they really want. And that's really, in my opinion, why they don't want to expand Badger Care, because they don't want any type of social program to really work, because it really proves the theory that social programs actually work. And obviously, we already know that with the USPS, obviously the fire department, police department, whatever. These are all social programs, right? But obviously, there's the programs that they want people to know that work, and then there's the social programs that they don't want people to know that, so that actually works. So I think that's in the same line. So it actually makes sense that they don't want to expand Badger Care in Wisconsin, because it doesn't align with their ideology.
The government 100%. Doesn't work. Elect me and I'll prove it.
Exactly. Elect Evan for governor.
So thanks for joining us, Andre, where can people find you if they're interested to learn a little bit more about you, or a little bit more about this program, or a little bit more about your organization? Give us a quick social media shout out for yourself.
Yeah, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. So my Twitter is Andre156. So you can find me there pretty easily. If not, you can always find our website with Our Wisconsin Revolution. So it's ourwisconsinrev.com, or you can follow our social medias. It's all just Our Wisconsin Rev. It's Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all Our Wisconsin Rev, and we're pretty active on there. So you can definitely connect with us. If you want to become a member, you can join at ourwisconsinrev.com, or you can sign up with a volunteer to help us with work like this, with healthcare advocacy. And we would really be thankful if you are interested in joining our organization.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me, Andre. Before we finish up this lovely Thursday show, Ev, I got to touch on a little bit of a topic we talked about on Tuesday, and that is Southwest Airlines' absolute meltdown over the holiday. Now, Ken Klippenstein from The Intercept posted today a letter from the Investor Day presentation that Southwest CEO gave on December 7th, where he said, quote, we had record quarterly profits and revenues in the second quarter. We had a solid profit, record revenues in the third quarter, and our outlook here for the fourth quarter is very healthy, which is just terrific.
It aged like milk, my friend. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Like we talked about it on Tuesday. They have the money to do this, and they're instead giving it back to their C-suite executives and their big time investors rather than prioritizing the product that they're putting forth from a consumer perspective. The Southwest CEO also said that the solution to pilot shortages is better wages, saying, quote, wages, you're seeing wages come up. It's a great time if you're a pilot to be negotiating, as that will, quote, bring more pilots into the system and help solve this. They all understand it's all about the money, and they will still do whatever they can to prevent giving any more money to the regular working class people.
Wages are the key, you know? Then pay them more. Come on, my dude.
Not complicated. It's really not. They make it so much more complicated than it needs to be. But this whole thing, as we kind of discussed on Tuesday, I think it really takes somebody experiencing a problem in person for themselves before they recognize, oh, wait, we should maybe do something about this. Yeah. And it's one thing to see thousands of travelers stranded across the country on Twitter. It's another thing to be one of those thousands of travelers, or have your daughter or your granddaughter or your parent be one of them. People are going to be angry about this. Something will be done. Buttigieg, step up, get the job done. Come
I got on. Another quip for you too. You know, nothing matters until it matters to me.
Exactly, Ev. Well put. So thanks for joining us today on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. And if you're lucky, William and Evan, we will see you in the very near future. You guys have a great rest of your day. Take it easy, party people.
It's not like it's complicated. It's very simple.